Hello and welcome along to the RTÉ Rugby Podcast. It is test week. Ireland in South Africa to take on the world champion Springboks this Saturday in Pretoria. I am coming to you from Johannesburg this week, following the Irish team over the next couple of weeks. We're here in Sandton, just north of Johannesburg at the moment. Loftus-Versfeld, where the match is played on Saturday. That's around 40 minutes up the road, the venue for this week's game. And then on to Durban next week. Johnny Holland and Bernard Shackman are with me this week to look ahead to the opening test. Fellas, how are we doing?
Yeah, great, thank you.
Good, thanks, Neil.
It's funny, maybe was it the ending to the URC season or the week in between where everything got a bit lost, but it felt like this was a fairly low-key build-up to a big test series. But I think yesterday it all just got dialed up to 11 and now we're incredibly excited. Razzy Erasmus was just in his element holding court in Pretoria yesterday. He was, as he normally does, he was lobbing the verbal hand grenades out there, laid his cards out on the table nice and early in the week with his starting 15. He was cracking jokes left, right and centre about Jack Nienaber tipping him off about everything in the Leinster camp and how the referees are delighted Johnny Sexton's gone. It was all jokes, obviously. But here we are, a few days out from the test. Everyone is talking about Razzy Erasmus. They're not talking about the team. And Johnny, that is basically job done from his point of view. Create a distraction.
His confidence in doing that. He's obviously a lot longer in the tooth, but he's very comfortable in his own skin. And I think South Africans are, and when they're playing rugby like that, you know, they know what they are. Their identity is very strong. And I think the Irish identity is strong as well, but I think from what I gather, Irish media and public, we're not sure where we're going with the tour at the moment. We don't know if we're going strong. I don't think you can go to South Africa and experiment, but I think Razzy has put a bit of fear into me anyway when I'm watching it, because the team, you know, we talk about developing players and stuff like that. He absolutely is not. You know, he's got a couple on the bench, fair enough. But I do think, like, there's a bit of, you know, you can introduce one or two, and we might have to with James Gibson Park being away, but you're not actually introducing anyone. You're going to play another experienced player. But I think getting some younger players, even like Jack Crowley, for example, Joe McCarthy, those guys I've kind of been vocal enough about, the fact that giving players experience is actually giving your young, dominant players more experience in that kind of a cauldron as well. So I don't mind Ireland going quite strong, but there's definitely a bit of a, it has ramped up since yesterday, and it definitely gives you a bit of a bit more context around where this one is going.
And it's funny, Birch, like I think the highlight yesterday was Razzy was specifically asked in his press conference, is there a bit of revenge on the cards, or is there unfinished business between South Africa and this Ireland team? And he specifically said, no, that is a word we do not use. And about 3 hours later on the South African X page, or Twitter as it was formerly known, this absolutely crazy and brilliant promo video for the game this weekend pops up, and it's just called Unfinished Business. And in fairness, it's like an old-fashioned WWE heel character. And I think a lot of the South African fans and media think we're getting very kind of like hot and bothered about it and being very sensitive about it. I'm loving it. We're all loving it, all the media over here. It's great fun. There's no real nastiness to it. It's just a nice bit of spice and a nice bit of entertainment and promo for what's going to be a brilliant game at the weekend. It's tremendous fun.
Yeah, it's brilliant. And I always enjoy him. But in fairness, I enjoyed when he was in Munster as well, getting to know him. And he's a mischievous man. He's got a lot of charisma. And he does it well. He does it well. He does it like better than most others, because there's a humorous angle to it. And also, to be fair, it kind of seems to work for his team. I think his team loved that hype, and they loved that idea of having a bit of a chip on the shoulder. And, you know, you've heard, you know, Delande and Estebes, you know, we've kind of got to see a little bit more from them since the World Cup in terms of long form interviews, and they let their guard down a little bit, and we kind of saw their mindset. And one of the most interesting things for me, which is that this game is absolutely massive for them, because after they won the 2019 World Cup, they didn't get a chance to play in front of their home fans again because of COVID, as in quite soon. So that same team, yeah, where I think that's why he's gone strong here, because you look at that squad, there are a lot of the main actors that were involved in the win in Paris, and you can just imagine the atmosphere in Loftus. And look, I think they, like, commercially as well, are trying to hype it up, because when Razzie picked his Irish team last Friday or Saturday, whatever, on Twitter, it probably was very close to what Farrell would pick today. And just speaking for myself, and hopefully I'm wrong here, seeing that team didn't give me the same feeling of wow as when I saw that South African selection yesterday. You know, and that's the challenge, that's the opportunity. Look, the Irish players, it's probably just my own bias because of how the season petered out to a certain extent at provincial level, and I do believe in Farrell's ability to get them to a place which is superior to that. But I suppose I have a sinking feeling or fear that we're running on empty a little bit, and that we could be, I suppose, we could be run into an ambush here, which could be could get nasty if we're not careful. Now, obviously, I hope that it won't happen, and it may not happen, but certainly, I think it's going to be a very, very difficult test match, particularly the first one in Loftus.
Do you have those same sorts of feelings, Johnny? Just like general optimism levels at the moment, what are they like?
Yeah, I wouldn't be optimistic, but I've learned that lesson before, because Ireland went to New Zealand and they did other things when I would have said, geez, they're up against it this time. This has to be the time when they fall down. So maybe I'm a pessimistic man, but that's the kind of general feeling that I have. This is going to be very hard going to South Africa with the team that they've just named as well. Andre Pollard, even in there, like, kicking his goals. I just think it's a game that, like, we've seen it even in the past against the Lions, like, they just squeeze the life out of a team full of quality, you know? So, like, they just kind of have their way. And when they're in South Africa, they're going to be able to do that. So I kind of have that fear as well. I think it's going to be a massive uphill challenge for Ireland. But again, you know, Bert just kind of said it there, like, Andy Farrell has a way about him, and maybe the team that he uses around him as well, by the way, that they get the most out of the players. I don't think they're going to be going down there and allowing this kind of mental fatigue to happen. Like, you know, they're going to have some sort of strategy, knowing the whole world knows that this is the danger, like, you know. So if he hasn't tackled that one head on, then they're really going to walk into it. But I think they'll obviously have to go after that, pick a team that's fresh. That's why I think just having one or two, you know, changes that aren't going to reduce your quality. That's why I've mentioned Nick Timoney, for example, absolutely, you know, very hungry to get after it and get a kind of a test spot for Ireland. Like, those kind of people could give you a small bit of a difference, but you don't want them to get caught up in the cauldron, so to speak, and underperform, you know.
It's funny, one of the things you said at the start there was you're never really sure, you know. You said you're not particularly feeling good at the moment, but it could all be very, very different on Saturday. And you referenced New Zealand and how we weren't too confident going into that, and that was actually something Paul O'Connell said yesterday as well. He was asked if he senses there's a big performance coming out of this Irish team, like they ended up having against France in the opening round of the Six Nations, where everyone was going in feeling a little bit pessimistic, and it felt like there's a bit of a cloud over the team after the World Cup and Johnny Sexton's retirement, and where were we going to go from here? And they came out in Marseille and produced arguably their best performance of the Andy Farrell era over the 4.5 years or 5 years now. And it was interesting, O'Connell was asked about that, and he said, I generally get those things wrong. He said when he senses there is a big performance coming, it hasn't happened. And when he hasn't been feeling good, that's when they do produce the goods. Now, he didn't tell us which of those he was feeling this week, but it was interesting, Birch. We all thought it yesterday after we finished speaking to Paul O'Connell, that he seemed a little bit tense early on, and he would have come into us to speak straight after training. So, you know, it could have been training mightn't have been particularly good yesterday. You're always just trying to read between the lines, but there definitely was this sense of just a little bit of tension around him yesterday and a bit of frustration. He's normally one of the most detailed of the Irish coaches when he's giving you an answer to a question, and he'll generally give you a fine long answer, and he'll go into the details and specifics, and he's quite interesting. But we all did remark yesterday that the first few questions we put to him were pretty short and curt, straight answers. Now, eventually he did warm up and he gave us some good details around the week, but there is a sense around here this week that they're all business at the moment. That they're staying at the moment, there aren't many distractions outside of the hotel. It's a it's a place where you're not going to be, you know, getting distracted by going down to the beach or things like that, obviously, because you're up in the High Veld. But it does seem like they're all business this week. And there's a bit of tension. We'll find out at the weekend whether that's good tension or bad tension.
Yeah, well, look, I think tension would be no harm. And I think Paul is as aware as anybody of the test that's ahead of him. And even if you just take his area of responsibility, which is the breakdown and the lineouts, both are going to get tested, you know, more than they normally do in a test match. And that's, you know, going back to, and I know he was asked a question about the clash in the group game, where, you know, Ireland's line had struggled. You know, he admitted that it's a massive challenge coming up against this South African team, because line-out and line-out defence is a huge part of what they do. And also, because of their aggression and physicality, getting quick ruck ball is also incredibly difficult as well. So I think he'd be locked into game mode now and trying to find the right solutions, and maybe just some of the calling wasn't as slick as it needs to be, but it was Tuesday, you know. But it's really important it's right on Saturday. And, you know, Peter Steph Dutoit, Franco Mossart, and Estebes will be doing their homework in Ireland. And the challenge for, I thought against South Africa in a group game, we just got caught, I suppose, trying to win ball off areas where it was going to be heavily contested and backed ourselves to try and win that. I'd like to hope that we're a little bit more a conservative, but just have the ball. The last thing you want to be doing in a test like this at altitude is losing line-up ball and you know, being in transition defence, because it'll just get nasty pretty quickly. So, I can understand that. I'm sure they're on edge because, you know, well, the Leinster players, who you'd imagine there'd be quite a significant amount of the matchday squad, their last experience here was pretty poor. They all, I think, know they beat South Africa, but by God, did they know that match could have went either way in the group stage. They've seen South Africa go on and win the World Cup, and obviously that was a dream goal for Ireland. So yeah, there's a lot of things. There's a lot of reasons to be in awe of this Bock team. Not in awe of them, but there's a lot of reason to have utmost respect of them. And I'd say it's going to be one of Ireland's biggest challenges to get, as I said, a group of players who look physically and mentally spent for the provinces back to where they're at. And I think the New Zealand victory was a brilliant victory.
Mm.
But we have to say New Zealand were in disarray at the time, and they made changes post that. And it wasn't just us who exposed them either. They made changes post that to get themselves back on a World Cup bid. Whereas at the moment on paper, well, certainly on paper, this squad, although the only thing you could say is, Johnny mentioned it, it's not an experimental squad. It's only two starters under 30. And you know, they may not all make the next World Cup, but at this moment in time, you would say they are absolutely the best team in the world on paper, 100%. So it's going to be a fascinating first test.
There's a funny dynamic to it all, Johnny, where you obviously have South Africa, who are the double world champions and the best team in the world. But they're going up and they're favourites for this test series, obviously, as well. And they're going up against an Ireland team who they haven't beaten, with like this group of South African players haven't beaten this Ireland team in three attempts down the years. Two really, if you probably, because I think you could take away 2017 because it was so long ago at this stage. And they've been pretty vocal and pretty clear about the fact that it is irking them that they haven't beaten this Irish team. So they're favourites and they're world champions, but they're still kind of coming into this series with the underdog mentality and the underdog point to prove to themselves, which kind of makes for a fascinating dynamic over the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, I think like we spoke about earlier, I don't know, it doesn't matter where South Africa are, like back-to-back world champions, and they think they're underdogs. They're going to do that to themselves regardless. That's the narrative that they throw out in Razzie spins. But, you know, they lost to Ireland, but they got the ball caught in the mall 2 metres from the line to win the game, didn't they? And, I think the frustrating thing for them is that they absolutely dismantled the Irish line-out and they put Ireland into uncomfortable positions where they were getting their numbers kind of wrong around breakdowns. They were bringing attackers in when they wouldn't normally bring attackers in because South Africa destroyed their breakdown, like Birch has spoken about. So they did everything they could to disrupt Ireland and still couldn't beat them, you know. So that's probably something that will annoy them, because, you know, how much more can they disrupt them maybe a small bit more in the scrum, but they're not going to get as much in the line as you'd hope. Like, you'd hope Ireland go to shorten lineouts, take away the two pods that they can attack, they can defend with, like, you know. So you'd hope Ireland have some remedies to that, and they won't get as much purchase in those areas of the game. Now, I think they will get more purchase in the aerial battle. I think they'll go after that because, you know, with Leinster, I don't think they've looked rock solid. Calvin Ash will come into that and hopefully shore it up a small bit, but, you know, you're still, it's still an area of the game that Leinster transferring to Ireland could be weak at, and South Africa are obviously very good at, you know, so they'll get as much purchase, but hopefully not at set piece, you know, there's obviously a need to beat Ireland, but it's a different Ireland as well, isn't it? Like, you know, we're gone beyond talking about Johnny Sexton, but, like, he was a massive part of the team that they couldn't beat. And Jack Rowley's a completely different guy who's not afraid of South African club teams, at least, like, you know. So there's a bit of a difference there, but they're going to target Jack twice as much as they've targeted Johnny Sexton. So there's going to be interesting dynamics. But I think the thing you get when Burchison in New Zealand, and yeah, they mightn't have been at their tip top, but you're going to go out for, like, real attacking strategies, and they get very clever in their game. South Africa have that, but they also have this mad mental strategy against you that they twist you inside out, mental gymnastics, and you're nearly beaten before you get on the pitch. Like, it's a very, very different dynamic of best team in the world that you're facing, you know. So it's class. I can't wait for it. It's long season and all that, but if you're going to continue a season, you might as well see a test match of this caliber, you know.
Yeah, you may as well. You know, if you're going to hang around, you may as well do it for something like this. The team, obviously, then, is going to be named tomorrow, 2 p.m. Irish time. Andy Farrell will be speaking later on in the afternoon then on Thursday. We're not expecting this to be an experimental team. We're expecting it to be as close as possible, really, to what we would have seen throughout the Six Nations and World Cup. One of the main calls he has to make, though, Andy Farrell, is at scrum half. Conor Murray or Craig Casey. I know Caelan Blade is in there as well, but I would say, given the way team sheets have gone, you would expect it to be between one of those two monster players. Razzie Erasmus is fairly certain it's going to be Craig Casey. Birch, he obviously laid out his team sheet on Twitter on Saturday, which was just a lovely way to just plant the seeds for the start of the week. And yesterday he casually threw in that he expected the small one from Munster to start at scrum half this weekend. He's been so bullish about the fact that he thinks Craig Casey is starting, it might make you think he's had a couple of people who've had an eye or so on training over the last few days in St. Peter's College or maybe around the team hotel. But what's your own thought on Craig Casey versus Conor Murray as a starter this weekend?
Look, I think traditionally you would say, oh, start Murray, bring Casey on for tempo. I think that, but we've seen Munster do the reverse. We've seen Conor Murray come on for Gibson Park for Ireland and be very, very effective. So I think realistically you have to start Casey here from a depth building point of view. Like, we know it's not going to be an experimental Irish team. I don't think that's Farrell's fault. I think he's picked the players who've been on form. The majority of the players have been on form where there's opportunities, like Cormac Izuchukwu, Timoney, etc. They've got into the squad. Sam Prendergast obviously has shown little glimpses, obviously hasn't had the game time, but you could say he's a form player, or certainly someone that Farrell believes can become part of his team. So I would say it's really important that Craig Casey starts one of these two tests. Just for him to get that experience, him to get that experience, and he is an experienced player already, but just to show that he's comfortable fitting in for Gibson Park and gives him a chance to mount a challenge to Gibson Park, because that's what you want. I think that Gibson Park is clearly number one in Ireland at the moment. That's come off, but you'd love to have pressure on him, and the only way to really get that is to give players opportunities. So yeah, I think Razzie's probably right, and yeah, it's a great opportunity for Craig, you know, who's had some really good form this year for Munster. And Ireland can't beat South Africa, I don't think, trying to out-muscle them. They need to find their attacking shape again, and we did it against them in Paris, and we still only created, I think, two real opportunities. That's how good their defence was on the night. But that's our way forward. And it's Farrell is well capable of getting this Irish attack back flying. And if we are going to win, it's going to be a key part of it.
Your thoughts on the scrum half situation, Johnny?
Very similar. I think Craig has to start really now. I think Farrell has been kind of his own man in terms of who's ahead of who and all that kind of stuff. But we've seen Connor coming on from the bench. I think it was the right call at the time. You know, you can't go for, but sorry, you can, but bringing James Kimson Park and Craig Casey with the same kind of style when you're going into World Cup and Six Nations and stuff like that, I think it was the right call at the time. But if you're to replace Gibson Park, you probably go with Craig Casey. Do you know what I mean? So I'd be the same. And I think, like, you know, my comment in during the week was like, if not now, like, when are you going to bring him in? Because this is the time to bring him in. So I think, like, Murray knows the place, and you can say experience will come for a lot when this thing heats up. But, like, Craig is so experienced now. And, like, the kind of the inside thing on Craig is that, like, he's just the ultimate pro all over his game, you know. So why are you holding him back? Like, he needs to have a go at it. So I don't disagree at all. And if that's the way Munster are going, I know Andy Farrell doesn't always go the same way. Like, he doesn't see the pecking order as being the same. But I think that's probably the way it's going, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think, like, it makes sense in multiple different ways. I think even if you look at, as you said, with the, if you're looking for something as close as possible to Jameson Gibson-Park's style of play with the pace and tempo and the speed of passing, you're probably leaning towards Craig Casey. And then you have, you want to get yourself into a good position where you can have Conor Murray coming on in the second half and manage the tempo a little bit better. And then, as Bernard was saying, from the developmental side of things, it's not necessarily an experiment to throw someone like Craig Casey in. He's been around the international scene for three and a half seasons now, and he's built up 14 or 15 caps. But if you look at his starts, I think he's got five starts. Three of them are against Italy. One of them was, the other two have slipped from my head, but they're not against major elite opposition. And he's 3 years into his international career and hasn't started a game against one of the real world leaders. And if you don't do it now, when are you going to do it? Because I think the argument we sometimes get for players not being given the opportunity to start matches is their opportunity will come because rugby is an attritional game and there's going to be injuries along the way. And if you were to use that as an excuse not to play Craig Casey now, well, you're saying, well, the injury is here. This is the opportunity that you've been given to do it. And if you don't do it now, realistically, when is he going to start a major test? He'd probably play against Fiji in November, or one of the smaller of the games in November, and then probably against Italy again next year in the Six Nations. And all of a sudden, you're so much farther down the line before you can give him a shot against a major team. In terms of the rest of the squad, are we expecting Jimmy O'Brien to start at full back?
Quick
answer on that, yeah. And then the other one around the team, on the bench, what are you thinking should be done there? 5-3-6-2, one of the selections there, I'd be looking at Ollie Yeager or Finlay Beelam as number 18, Bernard. Where would you be leaning?
I'd probably stick with Beelam. I think he's been good for Ireland. But I would swap him for second test. I would have another look at Yeager. I'd like both of them to get game time. Obviously, I think Razzie thinks we'll go 6-2. But I don't know. I don't know if we're going to stick to our guns. I don't think 6. I think 6-2 isn't as suitable for us as it is for them. I think the profile of their players is a little bit different. They do have a deeper depth on their bench where they can bring on game changers. I'm not sure we have that same level of depth. I'm sure we don't. We definitely don't, based on what we've seen so far. And I think 6-2 means you've no Robbie Henshaw. If no Gary Ringrose, which I think Farrell will want to get both of those into the 23. So, I think we'll go. I think they'll deliberate on it a lot. And obviously, you know, Razzie mentioned, they may go 7-1, which again, it's put a lot of pressure if you go 5 on your forwards, you know, to match that 7. But I don't know, sure, 6-2 really suits us as much as it does them. They're a little bit of an outlier in terms of the profile of their players, and they take a risk as well. But they've made it work for them. It hasn't worked as well for other countries or other teams.
Yeah,
it worked well for Leinster against La Rochelle, but in general, I just think it's more suited to their players than ours.
Yeah, and I think that's a good point, Johnny, where if you look at the depth in the Irish squad, where with the players that are on, with Jack Conan, for example, not being around, is there an argument that Ireland have more depth and more game changers available off the bench in the back line? Where if you are starting Gary Ringrose, it's nice to have someone like Robbie Henshaw on the bench who you know has a massive impact in him. And maybe if you're going 6-2 and leaving out Henshaw or Ringrose, are you ultimately just going 6-2 for the sake of going 6-2?
Yeah, I think so. Like I kind of see the argument for 5-3. Like I don't know if it is Conor Murray and Kieran Frawley on the bench at the back line. I'm not sure if you're chasing a game. I'm not really convinced by that. But if you've won a Robbie Henshaw and Gary Ringrose, because the other side of that is you don't have Jack Conan. So like it's possibly, I know I've mentioned Nick Timoney, but it's possibly him that would go in for the 6-2.
Yeah.
You already have Ryan Baird and possibly James Ryan. I'm really going by Razzie's team here now, but that's probably what we all would have gone with as well. You know, you're kind of covering your bases quite well. It just depends on who he wants to pick to start, because that will probably dictate the force his hand with someone. Like if he starts Gary Ringrose, you have to probably go 5-3. I don't think you can take that risk. Has he played one game? I'm not 100% sure. One game. So I don't think you can go 6-2 when that's the case. And then Gibson Park is covered on the wing, and I think he's done that quite well. I don't think Conor Murray or Craig Casey will do that as well as what Gibson Park has done in the past. I know it's never the plan, but I just don't think they'll do it as well. So I think there's too much risk there with the 6-2, whereas with a forward pack of five players on the bench, you can still cover it, you know. So I do think it'll be a 5-3. It just depends on, you know, we don't have really the inside scoop on who's carrying what or who's fatigued or who's going to play X amount of minutes, you know. So like I still think it's going to be a 5-3.
What do you see South Africa really targeting in the Irish team at the weekend, Bernard?
Well, the scrum for sure, based on I suppose the Bulls Leinster, which was obviously 4/5 of an Irish front five. Now I do think the Bulls scrum is props are better scrummagers than even what the Springboks have, and that's no slight on the Springboks front rows. They're obviously excellent scrummagers, but the Bulls are the reason they're not in the Springbok squad isn't what they do in the scrum, it's what they do around the field. So it's been a big 10 days for John Fogarty trying to get those players back into his way of scrummaging, which is it's probably a safer style and less likely to get exposed than how Leinster scrummage, where the props can be quite loose in terms of their angles and binds. Fogarty's kind of a discipline or a disciple of Greg Feek, you know, which obviously worked really well with Joe Schmidt, where Ireland had a very high percentage of success in their own ball and were very clean referees, didn't give away many penalties, never really got exposed. And as I said, Leinster's under Robbins a little bit different. They can be more aggressive, but if you don't get it right, it can backfire like it did in that Bulls game. But definitely the scrum was an area. The line out, obviously, the recent success there, and they'll want to go after that, because the line out's a key part of Ireland's attack. And I agree with Johnny, I think they'll go to the air, and obviously they'll be really interested in the kicking game. I mean, you know, we saw Willie LaRue as that second kicker really expose Leinster, but that's not how Ireland defend. They're not nearly as narrow. But when teams played when Leinster and the Bulls played a territorial kicking game, Leinster lost nearly all those key battles. And if you remember, they had 3 or 4 goal line dropouts just from out kicking Leinster, and that was basically like a set piece, you know. So and then they'll want to be physical, they'll want to bully Ireland with their physicality. And yeah, I'm also fascinated. This is an opportunity, but it's also a threat. I mean, the Springboks have won 2 World Cups by being very set piece defense focused. Now, the second World Cup was a little bit more, their tack loosened out a little bit. But obviously, they've changed coaches now, with Tony Brown coming in to look after attack. And like, he obviously was the Japanese attack coach that beat Ireland in 2019, a phenomenal attack coach. So are they also going to have that strength in their bow yet? Probably not. We saw little glimpses of it against Wales in the test match a couple of weeks ago, but you know, they could even be a threat to our defence, not just through power, but through some really intricate attacking shapes. And that's going to be fascinating. And obviously then Gerry Flannery defensively, I mean, you know, he's more than likely going to copy and paste what Jack did, because why would you change that when the players believe in it so much? But I suppose Farrell and Mike Cass will be looking to say, well, potentially there's going to be a little bit of lack of consistency and clarity there, and we can expose that. So there's lots of little wrinkles to this that are going to be fascinating to see unfold.
Yeah, there is, and that leads us nicely into the new coaches at the box, and like specifically Gerry Flannery, your old coach at Munster, who's in there now. And then you also have the Irish and Leinster players who've probably been able to glean a few insights on the Springboks from Jack Nienaber as well. So there's a few nice little wrinkles in there in the coaching. From the small sample size of that game against Wales a couple of weeks ago, is there anything jumping out that's in any way different to what Tony Brown and Gerry Flannery are kind of putting a stamp on attack and defence? Or is this first season for a coach really just about, I suppose, continuation and making small tweaks along the way rather than coming in with a radical new plan?
Yeah, I only saw some analysis on that. I didn't see the whole thing, but what came out of it was that Tony Brown clearly doesn't want to be stuck to a very blunt object in attack. And we've seen that, like Bert just said, with Japan, they were unbelievable in 2019. Best team to watch, I would argue. When you see teams playing with a pot of three, which most teams are doing now, they weren't just sticking to the middleman carry, two blasts or rails or whatever they're calling them, and just getting quick breakdown. It's South Africa in the past have used the middle pass to just get go forward and kind of suck in a defender or two. And then it's on the third phase with backs that they really had a cut, or they'd use their transition a bit more. So it'll be interesting to see if Tony Brown, you know, that's what came out of that analysis, that they were passing balls back inside. It wasn't just middleman carry all the time for quick ball. You can get quick ball by destroying that breakdown and leaving less time for the team to fold, or you can get quick ball by picking the easiest way forward, the best gap to get a bit of a nudge through the contact, and then they're going to be on the back foot anyway. So it's just two different ways of getting the same outcome of getting faster ball or getting a team on the back foot. So it's going to be interesting to see whether he is going to develop that and use Ireland as a way to see if they can develop it into something a bit more dynamic, because when the pressure comes on against the best teams, that's when you revert to type. So whether their game plan will be to expand it a small bit more, but they revert to type and get a bit narrow on their attack, will be an interesting part of it. I'd love to know what their game plan is before and after, you know, that and you get a preview and review. Obviously, we're not going to see that from the inside, but we might get an inkling as to how they're trying to play and executing or not executing. With Fla, I think he just fits the mold of, like, Razzie really took him under his wing, and Jack and he's a very personable guy. Like, you know, he brings a lot of personality to what he's doing, which is a lot of how the Springboks coach, you know, they have a strong narrative, and he's going to be the same in defense. He captures guys' imagination. He's a very funny person, but he gets a lot of buy-in, you know? So like, that's obviously going to be a very strong approach from them again. And, you know, he's going to be looking for fellas to buy into him now, I think, and using Ireland as a springboard to really launch the next part of their defence. So that'll be an interesting kind of undercurrent, but it's the attack that I'd be more interested in seeing how it plays out.
Yeah, certainly. And Tony Brown was speaking about it. He definitely, earlier in the week, he definitely has his own plans on what he wants to bring to that team. So even beyond this weekend, even over the next couple of years, that's going to be really interesting. To come back on
that, sorry, just on that one, and Bert just kind of mentioned about Billy LaRue and how he kicked. You know, that's the other part of it. Will they wait till the second half to really kind of unleash a small bit? Because if they kick and expose the backfield and Jimmy O'Brien, who isn't Hugo Keenan, like, I think Hugo Keenan has that Felix Jones kind of aura about him where he covers every blade of grass. And it's very, very hard to find space when he's there. Jimmy O'Brien is rapid and he's a great attacker, but can he cover the same amount of grass that Hugo Keenan does? So if Billy LaRue has his way with 50-22s and putting balls into spaces like that, and they're sucking through a straw in Loftus, you know, it's the second half where you might see them really kind of unleash. But that, again, another kind of whether they'll start with a kicking game or not is to be seen.
To come back towards the Ireland team and one individual player I did want to talk about, Birch, Joe McCarthy. It's going to be really interesting to see what sort of a plan South Africa have for him, or how they go about taking him on? Because, you know, we've always said that a player like Joe, these are the games that Ireland have been looking for a player like Joe McCarthy for. And he's obviously had a big impact over the last 8-9 months since the World Cup. And I'm just really, really interested to see if South Africa go after him, if he can have that impact like he had in that game against Marseille, in Marseille against France in the opening round of the Six Nations, and just see how he gets on over these next couple of weeks, because he's still very, very early in his international career. And this is a big opportunity, but it's a big test for him as well.
Yeah, it is. It's a huge test for him. And I hope he's not isolated, because I think he will get targeted. There's no doubt he will. Like, you can even just see Razzie going, "Oh, Big Joe, like, you know, is he really big?
Yeah. Evan?
You know, is he really big, Franco? Like, you guys have done it 60, 70, 80 caps. You've got 2-1 World Cups and they're talking this guy up. Is he going to come to Loftus and bully us?" And at first, that physical dominance is a big part of Joe's game, and he does it so well. But when you look at that South African team, they're nearly all tooled up to be physical. You know, we know that they measure on battle stats, and that those battle stats are those little physical collisions and dominance. So Joe will tear into them, there's no doubt. I mean, he has no fear, and he's been brilliant, but it's going to have to be a collective effort, and it's going to be a huge game for him, because he's coming up against two of the best operators in the game in terms of Mossert and Estebeth, and he's obviously, him and Ty Burner are a phenomenal partnership themselves. And sometimes I feel bad kind of overhyping the box, but because like the Irish players have done a huge amount internationally and provincially, like Ty Burner could play for any team in the world, but unfortunately at the moment there's just a bit of an aura about them in that, you know, when they come together and wear that jersey, when they come together under Razzie, they seem to be incredibly hard to beat. And it's that mental strength and mentality is what's, I suppose, so impressive. I mean, to win your quarterfinal, semifinal, final by a point, be under immense pressure, to beat the host team, and be under immense pressure and never really look flustered. It's, you know, to have lost a game in both group stages of the World Cup and go on to win it, like, they just seem to be bulletproof mentally. And yeah, it's and it could be one of the great sides. They maybe already are. They probably already are, because they've won a line series. They've obviously won back-to-back World Cups. And I know they get massively upset about rankings and the fact they're not always number one in the world, but I don't think anyone would swap what they have for being ranked one in the world for a year or whatever, 14, 15 months, which we were.
Yeah, and that's exactly what Razzie said yesterday. He said, you know, they'll take the 3 losses against Ireland if it means 2 World Cups and a Lions series over the last few years. We spoke, Johnny, about where South Africa would look to target Ireland. What, if anything, in the South African team do you think Ireland can go after?
Oh, that's a good question.
Thank you.
I don't think they're going to have to play their own game. I think they're going to have, like, whether they'll take them on physically or not, I don't think so. I think they're going to move them and beat them with tempo. You know, that's probably what they're going to look to do. But to do that, you have to look after your own scrum and lineup, like we said. And then the breakdown has always been a key part of Ireland's game, which South Africa are going to go back after again. Like, you know, so I think in a strange way, it's South Africa that are trying to disrupt Ireland's game, and Ireland have to do their own thing and stick to their own identity, I think. So we'd probably see them doing very, very similar things, like little kind of micro plays around definitely the second part of 3 or 2+1 or whatever way they're going to run it. So, I don't think you'll see kind of out and out kind of bully boy tactics from Ireland. I think they're going to move them and punch and move and punch and move and put them out of their rhythm, I would say. Like we mentioned, there are going to be changes in what South Africa are going to do. So try and expose that with their own cohesion, you know. But again, like Bert just said there, I just have about Joe McCarthy, I have this kind of vision of the replay where Etzebeth is popping up with this really aggressive smile, holding 3 players at once, and they're all trying to get at him the way we see with RG Snyman as well. I just think you'll see a lot of those kind of shots of them getting under Ireland's skin and Ireland trying to get away from them and move and punch and move, you know. So that's how I see it. But, you know, again, these are always the times that you see innovation. You know, it's a great time for innovation now for Ireland to throw something different at them. They can't really play the way they played in Paris or in France, you know. It's, mm-hmm. It has to be something different. So I'd be interested to see how they change that.
is it just Bernard about nailing the basics rather than identifying a weakness and kind of going after it?
Yeah, I think the basics will be massive, but I do think that it'd be really interesting if Goodman has any influence. I know he's there shadowing, but like his big strength is that ability to find a set piece opportunity that will cut them open. And I think we do need that. I think we need to send a little bit of a message quite early that we have the tools to unlock them. And just to answer your question, but I think the reason this Box team maybe aren't lauded worldwide, well, they are now. I think after that second World Cup win, they've got respect everywhere, but they're never as pleasing on the eye or as impressive as, say, the All Black teams, you know, of great, where they, you know, if they put 30 on you, 35 on you, 40 on you, if you were off, where the Springbok team are more comfortable in the trenches and in battles, and they have a way of playing which suffocates you and strangles you, and it's incredibly effective, and it's real cup rugby type rugby. But that's maybe part of the reason they haven't been lauded around the world as much as Razzie or the Springbok fans think they should be. But yeah, for Ireland, you can't run away from that. You can't run away from that dogfight that's coming. And I do think we do need to find one or two set piece opportunities where we can hurt them. But in general, yeah, it's got to be our basics. And that's, I suppose, 80-minute performance, because I agree with Johnny. I think that last 20 could be very difficult with the attitude, with the end of season, with the fact it's going to be an unbelievably partisan crowd. Like, let's be honest, it was effectively a home game in Paris. It was, you know, a lot of Springbok fans came to France and they were in that stadium that night, but more came towards the end, the quarterfinal, semi-final, final, and it was effectively a home game for Ireland. And this, there'll be no doubt, this is a home game for South Africa. You know, as partisan a place as I'd say Ireland will ever play.
Yeah, it's going to be, I'm really looking forward to actually just experiencing that atmosphere of Loftus on Saturday evening, because it's like it's been sold out for a while now. The Springboks Twitter account has gone mad with videos and stuff promoting the game. They're not doing this just to ship a few tickets. The tickets are sold. They're doing this just to drive the interest and drive the interest beyond even ticket sales and push this even further. It's everything is set up, Johnny, for this to be an absolute belter of a test match, a belter of an occasion. There's going to be serious niggle in it. There's probably going to be a couple of off the ball incidents, not quite the Battle of Pretoria in 1998 between Ireland and South Africa, but this is going to be full blooded stuff.
Yeah, it will be. But again, you know, you look at South African club teams, they can really throw the ball around. So like the skill level is so high in South Africa, we might not always see it through game plan and strategy, but you know, that's where the fear is for me. If they get a score early, you know, and you have their wingers and their ability in the back line, even if they go and build a score while kicking at the post, like I do think you could see a bit of a score open up. So that's where my fear is, and they can play a lot of rugby. If someone comes in to unlock them from an attacking perspective and give them that kind of freedom, then they can go the other way around you and really throw the ball around, get offloading channels and stuff like that, get on the front foot. But it will be absolutely, that's possibly why Paul O'Connell is tense. You know, I think if you were a coach going into this, I think it's interesting you said that earlier, because even in the quiet back pitch of Cork Conn and you're going into an AIL game, we never know where the players are at. You know, they could be very quiet and you're going, are they off or are they focused? You actually don't know. It's very, very hard to tell, I find, as a coach. Now, I haven't been in Loftus while there's, you know, tens of thousands of people dancing to a DJ while the South Africans and Razzie are watching your warm-up, you know, so it's very, very different. But it's going to be an incredible occasion. So I hope Ireland win it, or if they go close to it, I think that'll be a good outcome for them. I think the experience and the level that they're going to be playing at, to go within a one-score game at South Africa down there, I think we'd all take that, I think, would we?
Yeah, absolutely, I think. I was going to mention the trial laws being introduced this weekend, but we are running out of time. I might put a pin in that, and next week we'll revisit it and see what impact, if any, these trial laws actually had on the game at the weekend. I will finish up, though, and get a verdict from the 2E. In short, what's your thoughts this weekend?
South Africa. I hope it's not South Africa by more than a score, and I hope I'm very pessimistically wrong, but South Africa.
Bernard? Yeah, South Africa by 10 for me.
By 10. Okay. Well, there's the verdict. That's it. Thanks for watching and listening. Live commentary on RT Radio 1, 4 p.m. on Saturday. And you can follow our coverage from the ground also on rt.ie/sport and the RT News app. To our South African listeners and viewers on YouTube, which I know we actually do have plenty throughout the season, leave us a message or comment on what we should be doing and trying to see and do over, or ease as well, over the next few days in Johannesburg and Durban next week. All recommendations are welcome. And I hope you tune into us again next week ahead of Test 2 and recapping the first test between Ireland and the Springboks. Fellas, thanks a million for joining us, and thanks to everyone for watching. We'll speak to you again soon.